It's Labor Day. H-Town, live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
One of the only players the Texans were able to get to second base yesterday. They didn't have many base runners yesterday.
They didn't, but in recent Astros form, doesn't matter whether it's a lot of base runners or a few, they still don't knock them in.
That's right.
They don't, whatever they do, however, they will leave as many or as few runners on base as they're afforded the opportunity to.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, they left four runners on base yesterday, 0-for-5 with runners in scoring position as a team, and they didn't get anybody to third base. They did, however, get somebody to second base. Ramon Urias made it to second base on a double to deep left field, in which Taylor Ward, the left fielder for the Angels, is having a really good season. He's among the league leaders in home runs and RBIs. He ran face first, literally face first, into the wall in left field, kind of like into this little, like, corner where it looked like maybe the padding met the metal.
Yeah.
But he went down in a heap. He went down, and while on his knees, while the center fielder was retrieving the ball to get it back into the infield, you could see Taylor Ward on his knees on the warning track, waving the medical staff out onto the field. It was kind of a jarring visual, seeing the actual player who banged into the wall, like, waving the doctor to come see him.
And I was looking away from the television screen because I didn't want to see what it was. My first thought or fear was that it was going to be like Brian Barker. Some people remember this. It was Thanksgiving in, I think, 2002. Barker was the Washington Redskins punter, and he used to wear that single bar face mask.
Oh,
and he had a broken nose that, like, displaced his nose completely to the side.
Yeah.
It was disgusting. His nose was laying on his cheek.
Yeah.
It was bad. So I thought it was going to be something like that.
John Cena had one of those on Monday Night Raw. Like, somebody accidentally caught him, and you can Google it if you want to look at that kind of thing. So they were holding the towel up around his eye.
Yeah.
And I, like, part of me was like, okay, they were there so long. I mean, they went to break and came back, and they're still out there. And even once he got on the cart, they were driving that cart with extreme caution, like, very slowly to the exit area, that right field exit garage there. They were driving very slowly. I was worried, like, did his eye pop out of his socket or something like that?
I wish you hadn't even said that.
So while this was all going on, Amy got on her phone and Googled, and she said, oh, he got hit in the face with a ball, I think last year, and it broke orbital bones, and he needed all kinds of hardware inside his skull there to put his face back together again. So maybe that's why they were exercising. It turns out it was a big gash above his eye.
Yeah, so I'm guessing that's what it was, because it was for a gash, and, you know, maybe they had to do a concussion test maybe right there on the spot or something too.
Yeah.
It was the reaction to it made it feel a lot worse than it actually ended up being. But I guess, yeah, if he had reconstructive surgery up there and everything, and that's sad, they probably were trying to be extra careful about not jostling anything around.
Okay, yeah. So around some corners of the baseball universe, the Astros are getting criticism over the construct of their ballpark. I'll read Aiden Gonzalez tweeted this. Aiden Gonzalez, ESPN baseball reporter in Miami, tweeted this yesterday, and I saw some people sort of echo this. Feel terrible for Taylor Ward, who once took a fastball to the face and now had this happen. And he embeds the video of the play underneath this caption. He goes on to say, also, the same organization that thought it'd be a good idea to put a hill in its outfield still has a metal out-of-town scoreboard in the field of play. Stupid. That's the tweet. Should the Astros apologize for having a metal scoreboard out there in left field that almost took Taylor Ward's face off yesterday?
No, it's one of those charming things. It's a, you know what? On this Labor Day, we celebrate back when there was a time where maybe protection for workers was a little bit more footloose and fancy free.
You know what?
You know, we weren't afforded all these protections and placards in the workplace, you know, encouraging us to wear eye protection and everything. Yes, this is a throwback, is what it is. Taylor Ward, an homage to all of the changes that have been made to protect the laborer on Labor Day.
Yeah.
We can still have these moments as well. Yes.
It's weird because they, I mean, it's all over the map at Minute Maid Park, Dyke and Park. Like, if you're playing center or right field, you're fine because there's padding on the walls out there.
Yeah.
But it's true. If you're in left field, boy, you got the out of town, the visitor's bullpen over there, the out of town scoreboard. The visitor's bullpen is just a gigantic chain link fence with a little bit of padding. The out of town scoreboard is pure metal. And they said, Todd Callis said on the broadcast that you could hear his face. Hit the scoreboard out there. Like you could.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, yeah. Like you could hear. And you could see the reaction of his team. There's a few of his teammates. I'm watching the video here. They're reacting like a football player who's down, you know, and paralyzed on the ground. You know, like they're like on a knee. They're holding their faces. They're like, oh, my God.
Yeah, that's a whole. The reaction to it made it a lot worse than it was. He's got a gash on his forehead. He'll be fine.
Yeah.
The Green Monster is metal, right? Did they coat that with plastic or something that I didn't know about?
A texter points this out. The wall in Wrigley Field is brick.
Yeah.
It's brick.
Yeah. So, listen, I don't need you standing up for Taylor Ward and trying to act like the Astros are somehow demonic and just
white
having a
for Taylor
having
Ward.
Oh, sorry, there's a chance of injury in baseball. Mm-hmm. All right. We can't. You want bumper lanes on the base paths now? You know, maybe they'd actually call running out of the base path if that were the case. Mm-hmm. Unlike yesterday. So I applaud the Astros for having a throwback metal scoreboard. Yes.
Were you a fan of the hill?
I just didn't like it because it just felt. I feel like for something like that, it's got to be that, it needs to be something with historical context. And it can't be historical just because you call it Towles Hill. I feel like it's got to be more like there was a Native American burial ground there or something when we built. So we had to, you know, preserve the integrity of it.
Of that
like
area.
You don't just stick a lump of dirt out there and say, like, look, we've got personality in our ballpark.
A Native American burial ground at the corner of Crawford in Texas or whatever.
There was some kind of geographic formation that they couldn't disturb or something. It felt like they were trying too hard.
I hated the Towles Hill. I did not like the hill at
and
all.
And yet there were never any documented injuries on Towles Hill.
No. I mean, it almost murdered Lance Berkman one time and I think Craig Biggio another time though.
Like they fell down.
Well, dude, I could see where someone would have multiple, like if you run up that thing the wrong way, couldn't you see like a multiple knee thing going on?
Running uphill is one of the safest things you can do.
But not unexpectedly running uphill, right?
Well, if you don't expect it, it's because you're a moron. It's of all the things that you might not have known was out there, Towles Hill was not one of them.
Unexpectedly is probably the wrong word, but if you're tracking a fly ball and you lose track of things, you know.
Right, but when you fall uphill, you're just, the impact is not nearly as great. It's easier on your knees. There's just running uphill is very, very safe. I didn't have an issue with the safety factor.
Yeah.
I had an issue with just it's just a hill there for no reason.
Yeah, it's still this way with Dyken is that it plays really short to left field, plays really short down the line in right field, and then it goes way deep in center. It went way deeper when there was a hill out there. And I don't think they remove the hill for any sort of like moral reason or guys are going to get hurt out there. They remove that hill, and then all of a sudden you got a couple nice bars and restaurants out in center field and some places for people to sit. So there's that. This may be an unpopular opinion. I like sitting in the Crawford boxes. I conceptually do not like the Crawford boxes. I don't like that there is a massive section of that stadium where any schmo can hit a home run. You know, like you don't even need to make good contact. And then they'll land in the front row of the Crawford boxes. I don't like that.
Yeah, I guess it's still like part of it with any modern baseball stadium, it's all artificial and injected character. Back in the day, there were things like, well, the field had to be this dimensions because there was a rail yard there or because there was a slaughterhouse or whatever it might be. Each ballpark being unique, it's I'm okay with it. The Crawford boxes I know can feel a little bit artificial, but it's nothing like the very natural advantage of building a ballpark in Colorado at 5,000 feet of elevation.
Yeah.
Like that creates home runs too, like to an extreme degree. That's way worse than Crawford boxes.
Yeah, yeah. It's the short porch there. I'm not a big fan. Okay, what do you think the end game is here for Lance McCullers? What do you think happens over the next couple weeks, over the rest of the season? Do you think he's on the team in 2026, or do you think they eat his $17 million? He is not a usable major league pitcher right now.
I think it's, you look up and all of a sudden he's...
And I hate saying that because I like Lance McCullers. I'm rooting for Lance McCullers. I was rooting for him yesterday. He had he pitched two innings, the first inning, two strikeouts, guy on base, gets out of it. That was great. I wish he dropped the mic right there because that second inning was a disaster.
It's almost like if Jose Abreu had stayed in Chicago or something, except that he'd been healthy right up until he fell off a cliff when he decided to come to Houston.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. You can't separate him from the injuries, and yet he turns 32 in October, and there's no reasonable reason to believe that somehow he's going to start being healthy. I mean, he hasn't been healthy this year. And it's been for his non-injury related stuff. He had a weight room accident. He had a blister.
Yeah.
All of that. Yeah, I think you just got to move on. And just, Sean, we're in late September here. And
he ain't helping you this year.
I mean, we're in September now. Right. No, he's not helping. But look at what you're doing because he's on the roster.
Yeah.
It's because would I prefer it be some journeyman that they had signed and that's taking up the roster spot at pitcher? Yes, I would prefer that. I would prefer that it be a Jason Alexander type.
Yeah.
You know, obviously that's the best case scenario. But I, no matter what the financial consequences are, he's taking up a roster spot.
Yeah, I think perfect world. Look, I don't want the team to eat $17 million next year, because we know Jim Crane manages to that competitive balance tax. I know he's over it now because of the Correa trade, and they're going to have some guys fall off the books. You know, Abreu falls off the books after this year. They've managed to shuffle off most of the Montero contract, all of that. And Fromber makes $18 million this year. I don't expect him to be back on the team next year. I would, if I were the Astros, my solution would be to find another injury for Lance McCullers where you don't have to DFA him, you don't have to cut him. You can stash him on the injured list for the rest of the season. And then this one more year, man, spring training is basically a tryout for him to make the team. You know, spring training is a tryout. You got the whole offseason to figure some things out, to figure out how to be less wild. He is painful to watch when he's not on, when he's trying to find the plate. There's no nibbling going on. He's
right
all over the place.
Well, no, and I think that's probably the smartest strategy is he gets a full off season if he makes it through this season healthy.
Yeah.
He gets a full off season. But you get to next year. Look, it's not you're gonna eat the dead money, but just by having him on the roster, you're already eating that money by having him not contribute at all.
That's
so
true.
You're still like that money is spent one way or the other.
Yeah.
It's the roster spot that's more valuable at this instance.
Yeah.
So like if having him on the roster and paying him $14 million versus having him off the roster and paying $14 million, it's the opportunity cost of whoever you might find to replace him.
Now September's here, so they'll be able to call a couple of guys up. They get a few extra roster spots. I think I read yesterday Taylor Trammell is going to take one of those. He's coming back from injury. Jake Myers is close to coming back, Seth.
Mm-hmm.
So that's at least one more capable bat. I mean, I can't believe I'm saying this after what Jake Myers' last few seasons before this year have looked like. They need Jake Myers' bat in the lineup right now.
Well, we should mention this more often, I guess, because it's Labor Day weekend and people might not be all plugged in and what have you. If you didn't realize or know, Luis Garcia will be starting today in just a few short hours.
Yeah. Yep. And if he pitches well, then if he pitches well and they win – this was a good weekend for the Astros from the standpoint of a split's not great, but I would have taken it. If someone told me before the weekend, they're going to split this series, but you're going to get encouraging starting performances from Spencer Arrighetti, Christian Javier, and Luis Garcia, then I would have signed up for that.
And then all you have to do in the month of September is not be one of the three worst offenses like you were in August. They entered yesterday having the third fewest runs in the month of August. I haven't checked the updated stats yet to see. I have. Well, maybe they did it. Maybe
zero's not going to help.
Yeah, zero didn't hurt them at all. Yeah. It definitely didn't hurt them. but I don't know if it helped them.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
the two teams below them, I don't expect that one of them had 10 runs or something.
It'd be interesting to see where. Like, I would love to know who those two teams are. Like, that the Astros are this bad offensively, and they're still two games up in the AL West. Like, this bad. And again, it's just for August. They've been this bad all year, but they've not been great. Like, they've generally, other than June, where they started to creep up in a few stats. I mean, batting average, they've been okay, but zero slug going on with this team.
Okay, so in August, are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
The Astros did it. They got down to second worst offense with 99 runs scored.
Who's worse?
The Cleveland Guardians had 95 runs in the month of August.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if this makes you feel better or worse at all, but just we should point out, since they are facing the Angels, and as we're gushing about the pitching performances as of late. Angels fifth worst offense in the month of August.
Okay. Well, that tracks for what this series has been. These are two very offensively inept teams. 2-0, 4-1, 3-0 have been the scores.
The Brewers scored 186 runs in August, so almost twice as many as the Astros.
They've been amazing, man. The Brewers have been incredible. All right, Peyton Pendergast with you here on a Labor Day Monday. Appreciate y'all hanging with us here on a Monday. All right, the two biggest losers from college football week one. We will tell you who they are coming up next.
Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Programming note, confirmed. Week one appearance of Texans executive vice president and general manager Nick Caserio on Payne and Pendergast will be 2 days from now. Wednesday, 7:30, I'm assuming 7:30 a.m. That's when he typically joins us. Wednesday, 7:30 a.m., we'll get a chance to start to look ahead to the season with Nick Caserio, Seth. That'll be fun.
I'm going to have to calm myself down between now and then. There's an article in The Athletic that shows extreme disrespect to C.J. Stroud, D'Amico Ryans, Will Anderson, and more. We'll get to that in the next segment.
Yes.
But it's some bulletin board material for old Sethers here.
I love it.
I'm going to put some of these poll results from these anonymous executives and coaches, how they disrespect our quarterback.
Yeah.
And I'm going to use it to fuel me all week long.
Good.
Dang it.
Yep, we'll get to that in the next segment. That'll be fun. All right, the college football weekend is over. The two biggest losers from the college football weekend, and neither of them are teams necessarily, because I don't think in this new world we live in with a 12-team playoff, I mean, you can look at, UT, you know, first time ever, they were number one in the AP poll preseason. That lasted 1 week. They lost to Ohio State. Clemson loses at home to LSU, who hasn't won a season opener since 2019. LSU hasn't won a season opener since before the pandemic, and they beat Clemson at home. And then Notre Dame, in the third of the matchups of top 10 teams over the weekend last night, lose to Miami 27-24. Of course, I'm a Notre Dame fan. I came away actually encouraged by that game. I thought their young quarterback, C.J. Carr, played pretty well. I think Miami's going to be a really good team this year. And they fell behind 21-7, and they fought back and tied the game at 24, and Miami just made some plays down the stretch, so they win that game. So the lower-ranked team in all three of those games win this weekend. So the poll will be interesting to see this week when it comes out.
Yeah.
See what effect it had.
I feel of all of the energy boosts you get from week one upsets or what have you, I feel like Florida State is probably the one you should read into the least.
Yeah, well, should read into the energy boost. Do you think Florida State is?
I don't think Florida State's going to end up being a top 10 team. That was more about
Alabama.
Alabama than it was about Florida State. I think.
But some people get an energy boost off of Alabama losing. If we think,
oh yeah, if we, oh no, you should get that boost. Right? No, Alabama might indeed. You should read into the Alabama loss.
Yes.
I just wouldn't read too much into the Florida State victory. I think it's just an indication that, man, Alabama has just rapidly veered so far off course since Nick Saban left. And last year there were questions about the discipline of the team and whether, boy, this, it's one thing to not be as good a coach as Nick Saban, but it looks like they don't have any of the discipline or any of the other factors that came along with it. That in year two of that type of environment, things can get really ugly.
And that's loser number one. There's two big losers from this weekend. I know I said it wasn't a team. I don't think it's a team. I think it's Kalen DeBoer, the head coach. I think he's cooked. I think he's done. I think your point, Seth, about going if you're experiencing these things, which are all discipline issues, there was footage also that I saw floating around social media, and I watched a lot of that game on Saturday, but the ones where you can hone in on some of the Alabama players off camera and they get you the wide shot and you can see the complete lack of effort of chasing guys down and stuff like that. Programs like this with head coaches that are new, and he's 14 games into his career, those are hard things to correct.
And especially in this day and era of the transfer portal and NIL and everything else, it's not like all of a sudden 1.5 years into your tenure, you tell all of these guys who are basically free agents anytime they want to be, hey, listen up, fellas. Yeah. Things are going to be different around here this time around. Yeah.
Right.
Like, you
Doesn't
change
work.
Mid-course. That's hard to pull off.
Doesn't work.
They've already labeled you a punk, basically. If they're disrespecting you and not showing up to practice on time, all of those other things, and that now all of a sudden you try to draw a hard line, that's tough to do as a teacher in high school.
Yes.
Much less as a coach of a huge program like that.
Fourth loss to an unranked team in 14 games as the Alabama head coach, Kalen DeBoer. Nick Saban had four in his entire 17 seasons at Alabama. Three of those were in his first year in 2007, where he was trying to kind of right the ship, which he ended up doing, obviously, won multiple national championships. So, yeah, I think Kalen DeBoer is cooked there in Alabama. I think he's in the SEC. Like, it's not – like, some of these games, it's not going to get any easier for you, all of those things. That's number one. Number two is tied to Arch Manning. It's not Arch Manning himself, although I think Arch Manning has a lot of work to do. I think he looked kind of rattled in the game on Saturday. Look, Matt Patricia, who's now the DC at Ohio State, called a great game against a very talented Texas team. I just thought, Seth, there were so many times in that game, I thought his mechanics were bad. He's throwing flat-footed. He's slinging the ball 98 miles an hour.
I mean, I think there are a lot of things where I think people have tried to make excuses for it, and it's frustrating because a lot of those people are the same ones that were calling him a generational talent before he's actually proven anything in college football.
Yeah.
Now are telling you, hey, let's not jump to conclusions. Bro, you already jumped to conclusions. You're the captain of the ship of jumping conclusions.
Yeah.
You're on a damn trampoline. Don't tell me not to jump to conclusions. But I would say, going against that Ohio State defense, which is already a good defense, but now has a different defensive coordinator and is doing a lot of funky stuff that they wouldn't have seen on film. To me, at the very least, it just looked like Manning was frazzled. And that, okay, it would have been better if he wasn't frazzled, but at least it's understandable and it's his first start. Lots of good quarterbacks have had bad first starts in games in their college careers. So it's not a death blow to somehow Manning being a good quarterback, but I think it's a dose of reality.
Totally.
They're like, all right, let's pump the brakes a little bit on crowning him the next great quarterback before he's done an actual thing.
Which you and I have been saying the entire offseason. Why are people putting him as the number one pick in these mock drafts? First of all, when you don't even know he's coming out this year, he comes from a family where guys tend to stay in school a little bit longer because they don't need to come out.
Because they need remedial classes, is what I heard.
Does he even deserve to be there based on 93 passes attempted in your college career? The answer is no, and that's where my second loser is not Arch Manning. It's any of you out there in our business, in the broadcasting business or writing or anything, if you're a host in our industry who did even one segment over the last several months where the topic involved NFL teams tanking for Arch Manning, like they should just fold up tents and tank for a guy who's thrown 93 passes, you should be embarrassed by what happened on Saturday. Like, that is not a guy that any NFL team should be inviting losing into their stadium and their offices to go draft. Maybe he will be someday, but y'all were saying teams should start doing it this week for Arch Manning.
The funniest tanking for a quarterback dynamic that ever existed was when people were upset in the middle of the season that the Dolphins were playing too well to tank for Tua. And then they end up not getting the number one overall pick, but then Tua not being considered the best prospect in the draft or a good enough quarterback to be drafted number one overall. So they got him anyway.
They got him anyways.
Yeah. Like, that's like the very hazards of tanking. People are upset that they weren't tanking for Tua, and then they still end up getting Tua.
Dude,
it's just nobody wants to acknowledge how random this whole damn business is.
Dude, it's that's a great point. It's so funny because the Dolphins that year, the tank for Tua year, I got to find it. If I'm not mistaken,
2020.
He was drafted in 20, so it was a 2019 season. That was when they traded Tunsil before the year.
That was when Fitzpatrick was playing.
Fitzpatrick
really
was the quarterback,
well,
and in weeks, I think it was week 17 back then, because they only played 16 games, they were like a 3-touchdown underdog to the New England Patriots in the last game of the year, and they beat the New England Patriots. That was the last regular season game that Brady ever played for the New England Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
Patriots would go on to get beat by the Titans in the playoffs that year, and Brady would leave to go to Tampa Bay.
Now, the ironic thing about it, though, is that if they had effectively tanked, it wouldn't have been for Tua. They probably would have drafted Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
So tanking for a specific player is dumb at the onset until you watch an entire season play out.
Yeah. I'm looking at the box score right now. I got to see what the spread was on that game. Spread was New England 17.5. So the Patriots are favored by 17.5, and the Dolphins ended up beating them to go 5-11.
Let's redraft 2020 real quick.
Yeah.
Of these quarterbacks, Joe Burrow.
Yep.
Tua, in this order, this is how they went. Tua, Justin Herbert,
yep.
And then all the way down, Jordan Love at 26.
I would say, Burrow number one, obviously.
Yeah.
That remains. Now, I'm not a huge Justin Herbert guy.
Yeah.
But
I still would like Herbert because I think he's going to be playing football 10 years from now.
Yeah, well, and Jordan Love, Jordan Love had that one really good half a season a couple of years ago that got him paid, that got them beating the Cowboys by a mile in the playoffs that year. But other than that, Jordan Love's not been a great quarterback. I would say I'd go Burrow, Herbert, Love, Tua. That's
I would say Tua's fourth there too. Those other three, I feel like, okay, they can beat you downfield.
Yeah.
And that Jordan Love, maybe just we'll see what his ceiling is or whatever, but they can attack you downfield without being schemed up or having Tyreek Hill just beating people off the breaks or having to have they can run an actual offense no matter who the receivers are.
Yeah.
Whereas with Tua, everything's got to be just right. He's very much a Goldilocks quarterback.
They've all gotten paid. They've all gotten paid. They've all gotten big contracts, those four guys.
And I know people are going to just send me highlights of Tua throwing deep and everything. Like, no. I mean, actually earning that yardage downfield.
Because when you mentioned Tua at five, I'm like, okay, well, they probably should have taken Justin Herbert. But should they have taken either of them? Who should they have taken if you're taking a position player? Yikes. Listen to the players take. Now, Derek Brown, pretty good for Carolina. He's a pretty good player. Not great, but pretty good. Isaiah Simmons, eighth. Who's on like his third team now? C.J. Henderson, Texans legend, ninth.
Yeah,
Jedrick Wills Jr. is. I don't think he's panned out in Cleveland, right? I'm not sure. He's an offensive line. Mekhi Becton.
Interesting journey, but he's not with the team that drafted him. Yeah.
Henry Ruggs.
Oh my gosh!
In jail.
What a horrible. You got to get down to Tristan Wirfs.
Wirfs
before
is a
somebody
good player.
Feel really good about.
Yep.
Well, that's what. And did you go over the guys above them?
Yeah.
I mean, it was Chase Young, Jeff Okuda. Andrew Thomas before you get to Tua.
Yeah.
What a horrible draft. What the hell was wrong with you, 2020?
A pretty
this
solid.
This was in the middle of COVID.
Yeah. This was the COVID
draft.
But
it wasn't based on the college performance of the COVID year, though.
Correct. Oh. Yeah. It was a 2019 season. Jerry Jeudy, his 15th. A.J. Terrell. Now, CeeDee Lamb, good football player. There you go. Damon Arnett, 19th in this draft. Holy crap.
What a mess.
And then there's Justin Jefferson at 22. Dude, all of those teams picking, honestly, all of those teams picking once Justin Herbert got picked, 7 through 21, all could have had Justin Jefferson on their team.
Okay, this is where it gets interesting because you know how at one point the Texans had three former top quarterback recruits out of high school on the Texans team.
Yep.
They had three guys. None of them were good pros, but they had three guys on the team where I felt like, man, maybe Nick just wants to see if he can capture the upside of these guys that had
five
physical
stars.
Talent and potential and everything. That draft, the Texans have had all three of the cornerbacks in that first round, or three of the cornerbacks in that first round, and a very disappointing year for cornerbacks. Jeff Okuda, C.J. Henderson. They haven't had A.J. Terrell yet.
Not yet.
But then Damon Arnett was the fourth cornerback taken. So they've had three of the top four cornerbacks from the 2020 draft on their team.
Better to have them after they get let go by the team that drafted them in the first round to be the team than to be the team that actually drafted them in the first round. Wow.
Yeah.
That's wild. That is wild. That was a fun trip down memory lane. All right, Seth alluded to it. Disrespect for Houston Texan players from front office types around the NFL, and we will not stand for this, nor sit for it. We will yell about it coming up next. Wow, okay. I just came running back into the studio.
I was just about to take the show over, Sean.
No worries.
You're lucky I didn't lock the door on you.
I was next door in the studio. It's Chris Partee and Luke Morrow in for the guys on In the Loop today, and I was asking him what the question of the day is. Question of the day in this, and I'm giving it away right now, but they'll reiterate it when they come back in here. In the spirit of Arch Manning, what's the most underwhelming debut that you can remember?
Ooh. Oh yeah.
So
oh God. Yeah.
Not for you, not your debut at anything, Seth, necessarily. Just like the
I'm just remembering it now.
Somebody that you rooted for. Okay, so you got an answer. Okay.
Not one that I'm going to say on air. Yeah, I think it probably I think most men probably share the same sentiment.
It was pretty underwhelming.
I feel bad for younger men these days, though, because I feel like they've been more exposed to people performing certain things way better than they ever will in their life.
Yeah.
So you probably
Olympic
just
level.
Like way more than we ever were. So their expectations of themselves are probably unrealistically high.
That's hilarious.
This is speaking of MVP caliber performances.
Yes.
This I didn't expect to wake up today and feel the disrespect, but I felt disrespect. The Athletic in an article by Jeff Howe. Okay. Has NFL decision makers predictions for 2025.
Okay.
He pulled 30 anonymous coaches and executives around the NFL to get their thoughts on the upcoming season. And frankly, look, I wouldn't have felt disrespected if the Texans didn't win a lot of these polls,
right.
But the number of polls in which they didn't show up at all in the voting or got nary, they just only got one vote. I'm a little peeved, Sean.
Okay.
I'm a little peeved. I've got a chip on my shoulder.
Okay, I'm gonna need to lean on you to steer the ship on this thing because the link is not opening for me right now. For some
I apologize. I probably put the wrong link in, Sean.
No, you didn't.
Hold on a second.
No, you didn't.
Oh,
I clicked on it from I went to the homepage for The Athletic, clicked on it. Wouldn't open from there either. So, yeah.
Okay. Who's the MVP? 30 responses. And look, I didn't expect CJ to win this.
Okay.
Because you got Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, Pat Mahomes. They get the lion's share of the votes.
Okay.
That makes sense. Pat Mahomes, honestly, come on, guys. Like, put your thinking cap on. If you watch the Chiefs offense the last 2 years.
Yeah, it's not been good.
He hasn't been playing like an MVP. I'm not saying it's his fault, but they didn't do anything to really fix the offensive line either.
They
drafted a rookie with attitude issues and a torn patellar tendon to play left tackle.
Yep.
They don't have a good offensive line.
They traded Joe Tooney away. So they, now anybody in Kansas City listening to the two of us saying this would go, well, you guys traded Laremy Tunsil away. What are you talking about?
Right. But we're talking about them just making Pat Mahomes the slam dunk third place winner here for MVP.
And if Mahomes didn't win it last year, having a lesser year statistically, then he's not going to win it this year. They went 15-2 last year. You know, they were winning all those close games. It was kind of tailor made for him to win an unexpected MVP.
Lamar Jackson coming in fourth place there. I think Ravens fans should actually be honestly a little bit angered about that he would be fourth place finisher after a lot of them are irate that he didn't win it this past year.
So that's interesting. So the top four finishers are the four guys who have been the top four quarterbacks in every quarterback power ranking this offseason and are all in the AFC.
This is what's gonna chap your butt, Sean.
Okay.
There's two players that got one vote apiece.
Let me guess. One of them's Justin Herbert.
Yeah. I shouldn't have teased it with it. It was going to chap.
Well, that's
you.
Okay. I like guessing. That's okay. Justin Herbert and
Justin Herbert, who's in an offense where I do think Justin Herbert I don't think he got as much credit as he should have for their regular season performance last year. But that offense is very much about making it as easy as possible and to not have to lean on Justin Herbert. I don't think that's an offense that's going to make Justin Herbert an MVP. And then the other one vote was for Jaden Daniels. CJ Stroud didn't get a single vote. Got Jaden Daniels and Justin Herbert each getting at least one vote.
Jaden Daniels doesn't peeve me because I get it. He's sort of what CJ...
Yeah.
he is this year what CJ was going into last year, like his historic rookie of the year season. Engineers a huge turnaround. He actually was statistically maybe better than CJ as a rookie, and he went deeper in the playoffs. He made it to the conference title game as a rookie. If it had been Sam Darnold, I would have been peeved about that one. If that okay, would have been the other one.
This next category is always interesting because it's you're starting a franchise from scratch. Who are the top three? The top three quarterbacks you would take. This is weird. So they must have listed three, but there's only 31 responses. I don't understand. But anyway, so the question here is always, all right, you got to take age into it. And they were asked to take age and contract into consideration.
Yeah, yeah.
So the top three, though, they seem to have ignored the age part of it a little bit. Josh Allen, Pat Mahomes, and Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
I kind of get that, though, too, because I think a lot of people are thinking like, well, yeah, I want to start off on the right foot if I'm going to start this franchise. And then we'll figure out who his replacement is at some point. Then Lamar Jackson. CJ Stroud got two votes here.
Yeah.
The thing I've got, it bothers me that CJ is so young and that four people gave Justin Herbert votes and only two gave CJ Stroud a vote.
Yeah, dude, anything involving Justin Herbert being better or a greater asset moving forward.
Starting a franchise with him.
Any poll like that that has Justin Herbert ahead of CJ Stroud can just go to hell.
You know who got an equal number of votes as CJ Stroud to start off your brand new franchise with?
Who?
Drake May and Baker Mayfield.
I was gonna guess Baker actually.
I bet that would be the contract. Now he doesn't. He's gonna get a new contract probably.
He will.
Tampa's. He might actually. They might announce it within a week or so, like before the Texans game, perhaps. But yeah, so Baker Mayfield, that might make sense because he's like kind of you might look at him as a bridge quarterback while you draft a guy.
Maybe. And I think he signed a deal. He this is year three for him in Tampa Bay. He came there on like a 1 year, $5 million deal. He signed a 3 year deal last year for like $100 million, but he's outplaying that deal. He threw 41 touchdown passes last year. You're right. He might get an extension before the season starts.
Okay, so
Baker? Who's Drake May?
Yes.
Drake May.
Sean.
Same number of votes as CJ Stroud. What the hell?
Those guys are probably thinking of it as like, you know what? Get a couple years with him. We won't give him a new contract right away. And they can't just yet anyway. So we'll see what we have in him, but then we can also plan to draft if we need to.
I think he is. I think Drake May is in a more stable situation now than he was as a rookie. I mean, Gerard Mayo was his coach last year. Yeah.
I'm going to get offended on behalf of Broncos fans here. How the hell does Trevor Lawrence and Bo Nix get the same number of votes?
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
One vote for each of those. Cam Ward, one vote. I get that. Okay. You know, it's like getting a first-round pick and the number one overall pick. There you go.
Yep.
This one. Be prepared to be disrespected,
okay,
Sean.
Okay. I'm in my disrespect stance right now. Let's go.
Who will be the best defensive player in the league this season?
Will Anderson Jr. That's what I said.
Only six players got votes. Myles Garrett got 17 votes. Okay. I can accept that.
Okay.
TJ Watt and Max Crosby. Okay, cool.
Yep.
Micah Parsons only got three votes. Okay. Now, this was done before the Green Bay. That's weird.
Trade.
It shouldn't change what his individual performance is like, but I wonder if in Green Bay people are more inclined to give him credit, on an actually good team.
I wonder if when this voting took place, because I'm guessing it took place before the trade late last week, if there were people that were wondering, okay, is he going to hold out? You know, how much is he going to play? Like with he had this mysterious back ailment, which all of a sudden is all better. You know, like I wonder if there was so much murkiness around the Cowboys situation, or it could just be that people think TJ Watt and Myles Garrett are better than Micah Parsons.
So Chris Jones got a vote and Jared Verse got a vote. No votes for Will Anderson. I feel like this one, I wish they had done it kind of like they do with who's the best offensive player who isn't a quarterback. I feel like they should have done best defensive lineman who isn't Myles Garrett. Yeah, because I'd like to see Will Anderson on here.
Yeah,
that was and it's interesting. They're all edge rushers. All of these guys.
Yeah.
Other than Chris Jones.
Yep.
Jared Verse got a vote, which I feel like that's somebody just throwing one on a flyer. This is interesting about Myles Garrett. And this kind of some people wonder sometimes about like, okay, how much value does a defensive player really have? The one coach said, your whole game plan is centered around one guy. It's a bleeping nightmare.
Yeah.
Use the F word. I didn't want to say that on the radio.
That's smart. Yeah, that's smart. Well, and what's Is there any D'Amico disrespect going on?
Yes.
Offense,
yes.
Defense. All I need is coaching.
Who are the three best defensive play callers in the NFL?
Oh, well, definitely D'Amico Ryans is one of them for sure, I would say.
So each person got three votes, and it actually sums up this time. D'Amico Ryans, out of 90 potential votes, only got one vote on this one.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
That's wild to me. Did Matt Burke get any votes? Is there any conflating of who the person is in Houston?
Oh, that's no. I think that probably what happened here is Vic Fangio got the most votes. Yeah. Brian Flores got the second most. Steve Spagnuolo. All three of those guys, I think it's not best defensive coordinator, it's best play caller.
Best play caller.
And those three guys do a lot. They have a lot more complexity in their schemes than D'Amico does. So if you change the verbiage to best defensive coordinator, I think it might have changed a little bit. D'Amico tries to keep it as simple as possible for guys so they can play fast. So that's the play calling. It being called best play caller is going to favor guys like
that. Who were the top? So is Fangio, who was second?
Fangio, Flores, Spagnuolo, Mike McDonald, and then, Vance Joseph.
Okay.
We're the top five.
Okay. Yeah, see, that's interesting, too. Like, the ones that aren't, Mike McDonald is a head coach who operates as the defensive coordinator. Those other four guys are all DCs for offensive head coaches. You know, like, I wonder if that shines a spotlight on you more when you just get everything delegated over to you as a DC. Like, like Fangio and Spagnuolo. And Vance Joseph. I mean, they feel like the ones who aren't head coaches feel like they're the head coach of their defense. Maybe that's part of it too.
You know what though, too? That's also, it's interesting because that's a very 3-4 heavy.
Mm.
So in a 3-4, there's a natural, I think all of them are 3-4s actually. In a 3-4, there's a lot more complexity naturally just because you've only got three defensive linemen. The linebackers are used as a defensive lineman. You're bringing guys from different areas. Yeah. So it's just a naturally it's more fun to watch the X's and O's in a 3-4 than it is in a 4-3.
Do they predict a Super Bowl champion, these executives? Do they have other predictions here where the Texans are getting
disrespected? I don't know. I had such a hard time moving down through all of them that I was just, okay, three teams that will exceed expectations they had.
Okay, okay.
The Texans
will not make this list.
They got one vote.
They did?
At the very bottom, okay. Along with the Cowboys. And then the Lions, which is just, I think expectations are pretty high, so they're not going to get a lot of votes. The Jets only got one vote, which is, that's disrespect towards Aaron Glenn.
Yeah.
And yet I can't blame people because I think a lot of people like Aaron Glenn but feel like, no, I don't think anybody can overcome the ownership of that dreadful franchise.
Cursed franchise. All right. Okay, cool.
The Texans did get three votes for three teams that will fall short of expectations this season.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. They're getting respect for underachieving potential.
The Lions were an alarming favorite in that regard. Now, the Lions have a new offensive coordinator and a new defensive coordinator.
Yes.
And the head coach is not a coordinator.
Yeah.
Like, that's disrespect towards specifically the head coach on that one.
Yeah, that's factoring in with me heavy as I'm going into fantasy drafts. I still have one more fantasy draft to do this week. And I want so bad to be like, well, I'll just take Jared Goff in the 10th round. He'll get me 30 touchdown passes. Amon-Ra St. Brown's going to get 1,500. Jahmyr Gibbs is this. Sam Laporta is that. Ben Johnson might end up being a big deal there in Detroit. You know, that's while he was there, he's the coach of the Bears now, obviously.
Here's a quote. They'll win the division, but they're talking about the Texans.
Yeah.
They'll win the division, but they're not Super Bowl contenders.
Okay. Well, that's what they've been the last 2 years. I think that's what most people.
But they're not contenders? They're not contenders?
Contenders. How far deep do you go on the list to define?
I think that right now they look at it as, look, the Ravens and the Chiefs really tore you apart. And I know, like, you can tell me the final score of the playoff game versus the Chiefs, but in the fourth quarter when it really matters, the offense had no answers down in the red zone there. So it's I get it. They beat the crap out of the Bills, but it was at home when there were just zero healthy receivers for the Bills. So I get where that sentiment comes
from. I'm super excited about this year. I think the offense is going to be better. I think the defense is going to be elite. If we're talking about the exercise that you were just outlining here for the last few minutes, Seth, and we're talking about expectations for the Texans, or are they contenders, the first two lists that we went through in this exercise, the best or the MVP candidates and the people you would build a franchise around, it was the same top four guys in each of those things, and it was the four best quarterbacks in the AFC who happened to be the most consensus top four I've ever seen for the four best quarterbacks in football are all in the AFC, and they're all teams the Texans are chasing. Maybe they're not chasing Cincinnati, but they're definitely chasing the Ravens and the Chiefs. Yep. And I would suggest they're chasing Buffalo, even though they beat them last year. They're going to get to play all three of them this year. So we'll find out when the season starts, you know, just how good they are compared to them.
The Chiefs and the Ravens on the road are the big ones. Yeah. I mean, that's Buffalo at home. I don't know. I feel freakishly confident about that. And I got to remind myself that, man, all right, Josh Allen did have his receivers were banged up in that game. Yep. And that was by far that was such a one off compared to how Josh Allen played the rest of the year. You got to try to knock me off my cocky perch when the Bills come to town.
We get them on a Thursday night and they're the road team on a Thursday night game. So that's one less. They have a travel day, you know, the Texans don't. They'll sleep in their own beds. That'll help, I think. Chris Partee is here representing In the Loop. Luke Morrow coming into the room right now. Coming on to the stage. Luke Morrow, what's up, fellas?
What's happening,
y'all?
How
we doing? How we
doing? Pretty good. Happy Labor Day to everybody.
Same to you. On Labor Day, we labor.
That's what we do around here, right?
Absolutely.
No days off.
So Colin is in for Figgy.
Mr. Neal.
And you guys are in for, Colin Neal, and you guys are in for John and Reggie.
Yes.
What is the question of the day?
Question of the day. So this is in, I guess, honor of Arch Manning and his debacle.
Yeah.
Over the weekend.
Yeah.
Honor is one way to put it, yeah.
Yeah, so what is the most underwhelming debut in your life? What's something you were really, really excited for, but it ended up, I guess, falling short?
Not necessarily by
doesn't
a
have
debut
to be sports.
We made. Yeah,
yeah no. Doesn't have to be sports.
I ran this question by Seth, and it took him to a dark place.
Uh-oh.
Well, like, truth be told, pretty much with any new
guys.
Encounter I've ever had with any woman. But
we've all been there.
You get so excited, you know?
Hey, these things happen, okay?
I'm so happy to be with you.
I was nervous.
For me, honestly, it was the... This is going to sound dumb, but I think a lot of people listening had the same experience. Bill O'Brien's first preseason game is a brand new head
That's
coach.
That's a great
where
one.
The starters guys had to stay on the field the entire first half
to get it.
Was it to even get a first down, Sean?
They got shut out. I know that.
It was really, really bad versus the Arizona Cardinals in the first preseason game of this new offensive-minded head coach with his game plan offense coming out of the coaching wellspring that is the New England Patriots? Yes.
Two funny things about that. One is that the irony of that performance in that game was that, yeah, the Texans were the worst team in football the year before, but largely touted as like, hey, they have a lot more talent than their record. They had a lot of injuries, and Schaub is throwing pick sixes all over the place.
This is
actually not a bad 2-14 team.
And then
you know, you debut Ryan Fitzpatrick as your quarterback there, and it's like, okay, now they're a bad 2-14 team.
August 9th, 2020. These were the drives in the first half. 3-and-out. 2 plays, interception. Then in the second quarter, they had somehow 46 yards on 11 plays and a punt. Then a 4-and-out. And then finally, the last play. Oh, I didn't even remember it. 7 plays and an interception. Those were the drives in the first half with your starters on the field.
So that was, okay, you said 2020. I think you meant 2014, right?
2014, yes, 2014. Okay.
I just wanted to make sure we didn't have a bad start in 2020 as well. So there's that. The other thing I remember, that was the first game. That was my first Texans game as a 6'10 employee.
Okay.
So I was doing post game. I must have fired 4 people.
My goodness.
Whitney Merciless, you're out of here. I was firing people left
and people
right.
Left and right
I was
going
firing
out.
Firing people, yeah.
I'm sorry to do box score reading on this, but we got to go into the third quarter. And it's just a preseason game. 5 plays and a punt. Next series, 3-and-out. Next series, 3-and-out. And then and they ended the game with a safety. Oh, my God.
Cherry on top.
What was the final
32
score?
32-0 was the final score in that game.
I got to go back and find Bill O'Brien's press conference for that.
Yeah.
I feel like that needs like a mini 30 for 30.
There's
got to
be some sound bites in there.
Dude.
Something good.
Yeah, something in the system in there.
August 9th, 2014. You got me nervous after I said, I don't know why I said 2020, but August 9th, 2014.
You still got the 2020 draft on your brain from a couple of seconds ago.
That might be one of the most depressing offensive drive charts I've ever seen in any game ever.
That team went 9-7 that year.
I know. Crazy. So that's what we were looking at. Yeah. And we were freaking out.
That's a good one.
It's like when the Lions went 4-0 in preseason, and then went 0-16 in the regular season. We're going to be good this year.
That's right up there with that. Right.
Anyway, Sean, what was yours?
I told you guys mine. Mine is a wrestling nerd one from back in the day. But I think even even the new wrestling fans have seen the footage of this one because replayed every year at Thanksgiving at Survivor Series time. I was in the building for this at the Hartford Civic Center in 1990. The big debut was The Undertaker. That was The Undertaker's debut. That was legendary. The other thing was WWF back then had this gigantic egg, like an egg the size of this table, that they had been showing on TV for 2 months, and they were teasing the egg is going to hatch at Survivor Series on Thanksgiving in Hartford, Connecticut. And they were building this thing up crazy, this gigantic egg, and the rumors were abounding. Is Ric Flair going to join WWF and pop out of the egg? Like, what wrestler is going to pop out of the egg? And I remember being there that night, and they have a drum roll, and this egg hatches, and it's some dude in a turkey outfit who's just dancing around in the ring, and just they called him the gobbledygooker, and I'm like, what is this? I remember, did I pay for?
I remember being 7 years old watching it vividly. I was like, even at 7 years old, I'm like, what the hell is this?
Dosey going with Mean Gene Okerlund in the ring, and I'm like, Seth's Googling it right now, I can tell.
I'm looking at it.
That's not Ric Flair.
Seth, you have to check that out.
I know, and it wasn't even a guy. You couldn't see his face or anything. It was all turkey, and it was all feathers and head. And it had a chicken head. Yeah. It didn't even have a turkey head. It's got a white chicken head with brown turkey feathers. Yes. What the hell?
Yeah,
and it's actually Hector Guerrero, which is one of Eddie Guerrero's uncles.
That's who was underneath the costume.
It was underneath there,
I think it was going to be like the new logo or something.
He's supposed to be like a mascot for WWF.
Which, again, is like, who wants a turkey?
Why did it have a chicken head?
So what was it like in the arena?
Everybody laughing. We're all looking at each other like, what is going on? No, I don't even know. People were mad. They were booing it. Okay. Like, because they hyped it up.
They did.
Like, imagine.
There's one. Well, it must have made more than one appearance, too, because I'm looking at one where it has a purple head, but then there's another one where it has a white head.
House show. Seth, they've brought him back as a joke numerous times through the years.
Okay.
Yeah, like they... WWF ended up admitting, like,
they had to acknowledge this finally.
Yeah.
They finally had to acknowledge it. Yeah, this was bad.
It was really bad. So, that's mine. Not good.
I thought maybe you were going to say the Shockmaster when talking about
that'd be a bad one, too.
Wrestling
that was that's a good one, too. Just burst through the wall and trips over his. He had a stormtrooper helmet on that was covered in glitter. You could do this whole topic just on wrestling.
It's true.
Formerly Tugboat.
I was at the Hartford Civic Center when Ultimate Warrior debuted at WCW, it was terrible. Hulk Hogan.
That was bad.
Really? Yeah. Why was it terrible?
Because he went off script. Yeah, he went off script. They were going on for like 20 minutes, the two bickering at the entrance in the ring, and people were booing that and walking to the concession stand, and it was just terrible. He wasn't the same.
Two olds just yelling at each other. I remember that. That's what it was. Seth, that's a great pull. That Cardinals preseason game is
I didn't remember that it was as bad as it was.
I mean,
you can't overreact to preseason games, but that was that was really bad.
I'll never forget doing post game for that one. That was that was my first post game show at 6:10. I'm like,
people calling for the coach to be fired after one preseason game.
Calling for people to be fired. It was crazy. Because I'd never done a post-game show before, so I'm like, I think this is what I'm supposed to
right?
do. I was like hot taking all the firings. I was firing everybody. It was great. And Meltzer's looking across the table at me like, oh, wow. Sean's coming in hot.
He's on a roll
All right. By the way, you're listening to KLT AM, KLT FM, HD2, Houston and Odyssey Sports Station. Crosstalk has been brought to you by D&M Leasing. Crosstalk has been brought to you by D&M Auto Leasing. Seth? Antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies, and I don't want to hear any of that gobbledygook out of you tomorrow, okay? For real tomorrow.
I'm going to come in my turkey outfit.
Please do that.
We are done. We are out of time.